This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
Declare your independence on the Free Talk Live Network.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, on Free Talk Live Network on Genesis. We're continuing our conversation with Off Grid with Curtis Stone. Curtis Stone's had a lot of experience, an urban farmer author, and has a YouTube channel, and has been working in big tech quite a bit and consulting, going around the country. Just spoke at Anarchapoco this year, and we had a good conversation. I think you'll enjoy it. Just sit back, listen, and learn something. I got three questions, and this is standard for me in any of these kind of conversations. I knew we'd get to it with you. The first thing, you're going to have this intentional community, and I'm for unintentional. It's like you have your 40 acres, and you got your fence off 8, and kind of somebody else, a neighbor, of what, peace out. You got your property, I got mine. This is mine. See, yeah. The fence right here is mine. Mine. You got yours. Maybe it's not yours. It's yours. Not yours. It's not mine. Don't care. This is mine. See this right here? Mine. Mine, 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 mine. My rules, my thing, mine. So that is so important to me, because that's the only purpose of government, in my opinion, is protect individual property rights, which means my freaking land, okay? So if you're going to have intentional communities, well, that's a whole other can of worms. And I haven't seen one that's lasted, certainly generations or family time or passed down or whatever. You're always getting voted off your own island or, you know, something or something. So I got three questions. One, what do I have to do to be part of your thing, like even your farmer thing, well, your freedom farmers, we'll talk about that in a little bit. What do I have to do? What's required of me? Certainly if I'm living somewhere. The second thing is, what am I prevented from doing? Well, you can't do that because we don't like that. And you say, well, I was wanting to do that. And then the third thing is, what's your conflict resolution? And when I talk to these people, these intentional communities, and they want us to come and participate, of course you do, because I got resources. Heck, I make my own electricity. I got tools. Of course you. We really want you. Of course you do. What makes you think I want to go there? Because what do I have to do? What can't I do? What's your conflict resolution? They haven't even thought of it. And it, well, yeah, we'll figure it out. And I'm going,
I don't do that. I just don't do that. I don't do intentional communities. That's not my thing. I want my property. Like, go buy a property close to me if you want to live close to me. But I don't do that. I don't do workshops. I don't do any of that. Because people are lazy.
That, you said a naughty trash can word. I got to mark the time again.
Sorry. Oh, I said it again. People are lazy. And so I just, you know, I don't do that. So when I did workshops, I charge for them. And so if you want to come on my farm and learn from me, you pay. And I keep the amount limited, and some people get offended by that, and go ahead, be offended. People always look for reasons to be offended so they can be offended. I've been teaching workshops for years around the world, and I've always found that a higher ticket price commands a better experience for everybody. Yeah. When you have cheap when you have cheap tickets or the work, the classic hippie permaculture workshop is, it's almost free, and then you help us build a cob oven or something cliche like that. It's lame, and anybody who's serious about learning stuff doesn't really learn anything, because the experience is dragged down by the lowest common denominator. And so when you have a workshop that's cheap, people don't really value it, because some of them I get in for free. You know, I used to do these workshops at the universities, and they would subsidize the ticket for people of color or people who are poor or, you know, dumb things like that. And then you get these really annoying people who just waste everybody's time. And then the people who are serious, who really want to learn, it's the lowest common denominator. It's like public school, right? Public school, government school. It really inhibits children from excelling because you're dragged down by the lowest common denominator. So I'm not an egalitarian. I think most people are stupid. And so I just accept that. And if people don't like it, I don't really care. And so I just charge. So as far as workshops on the farm, they were minimum $2,000. And so, yeah, you can't afford it. Well, then it's on you to figure out to find a way to afford it. And if you can't afford it, then that's not my problem. And so if you're serious about running a farm and you are ready to make the commitment, you're going to have to spend money anyways. And so spending money up front on a really solid education is going to make your experience a lot more. It's going to make it succeed a lot quicker out of the gate. And so that's kind of, that's how I operate. And so as far as on my homestead here, I don't do any of that volunteer stuff. I pay people. I want quality people, and I pay people. I don't do hippy-dippy stuff. Oh, come and apprentice with me and work for free. No. That never works. I've tried it because of my, you know, my profile, I guess you could say. I've literally had people reaching out to me to offer to work for free forever. You know, I'm almost 15 years on my career, and in the early days, I did take people up on that. But then when it came to doing the unattractive, unsexy work, which is the work that needs to get done, they just didn't want to do it. And so then I had to have to do it myself. And then now I'm spending time to teach you something that you don't even really want to do. And then it just becomes inefficient. And I saw this too before I started farming. I rode my bike down the West Coast. So in 2000, it was fall of 2008. I rode my bike from Kelowna, BC, Canada, which is just right up north from Soyuz, which is right at the border of Washington. I rode my pedal bike straight down, hit the Columbia River, hit the coast, rode all the way down to Tijuana, and I visited farms and places like that along the way. And I showed up as a volunteer doing this thing called woofing, wheeling workers on organic farms. And so I was that volunteer. And I was keen, because I was a guy showing up on my bike. I was very physically strong, had great endurance, I was a go-getter. And so I would show up to these farms where there was like four or five other volunteers, and I was the only one hustling. Everybody else is just like, yeah, we just work a couple hours, smoke a joint, hang out, you know. I was like, no, I'm cranking, man. I want to work. I want to work hard. I want to break a sweat. I want to get exercise. I want to learn. And so when I was volunteering on these farms, I immediately became the favorite, because they're like, wow, this guy's hardcore. This guy showed up on a bike and he'll work all day and not complain. And so I had that attitude, whereas most people are just like, eh, it's kind of lazy, you know. I just kind of learn some stuff and hang out. And that's just never my attitude. And so I don't like people that have that attitude. And so I basically filter. And so if you don't share my values, then you don't get to come to my place, and I don't care.
You can't just whiz past that, I filter. What the hell does that mean? You have to hike a mountain or something? You know, what's your filtering
process? Yeah, almost. The filter is, the filter is the price, first of all. And then the other filter is the attitude. And when I do, like now, I'm teaching workshops on my homestead, which I have to interview you before you come in. And so I'm not letting just random people show up at my property, because, frankly, I don't want everybody knowing where I live. And my wife and children are here. I don't want annoying people around my family. And so
annoying.
I'm a total elitist when it comes to community, because I've tried it for years, and I've visited intentional communities. You mentioned that. You know, the only ones that work are the Amish, the Mennonites, the Quakers, the Hutterites. They're the only ones that work, are very super religious. And I'm not religious, though I am very spiritual, and I do believe in the Bible. But I don't call myself any particular denomination. I don't feel I need to. But I do recognize that those are the only communities that work. Any community that isn't connected with a singular thing that unites them falls apart. And I've visited dozens of them around the United States and Canada, and none of them work unless they're very religious. And so you got to hand it to those people for figuring that out. That's how to do it, because you need to have a master, and you need to have a sort of a governance that is above and beyond the individual. And so that's why cults always fall apart, because cults are always, you're always worshiping the individual. But religious societies, Mennonites, Quakers, Amish, they worship God. Yes, they have leaders that are in important positions, and they always patriarchal. Matriarchs never work, because that's the hippy-dippy one where nobody wants to admit who the leader is, because the woman doesn't want to admit that she's the leader, that everybody knows she is, and so it creates this awkward tension. That's why the hippie communities always fall apart, because they're matriarchal, in my experience at least. And so I just don't play that game. I'm just like, this is my property, and if you want to come here, these are the rules, and if you don't like it, don't come.
You know, I did the interview. I remember James Corbett and I do a show
every
other
Corbett.
Week for years, and he's really, starting, Solutions Watch. We really started, the solution thing. We're trying to, bringing us down this way. And he suggested that I talk to someone that he had talked to, interviewed years ago about something else, and then found out that he had an intentional community in Northern California in some, canyon area or something. Yeah, you should talk to this guy. I think it'd be interesting. So I interviewed the guy, and he had his experience that he had with his community. It got to the point to where it was producing enough food to sustain 25 people, four or five families or something like that. It was kind of getting up there. But he still supplemented it. He had an IT business. He'd drive down the mountain and do whatever and go back. And it got to the point to where he had kind of a criteria. He was the first one. And then there was another guy in Montreal that had, maybe you might know him, but he and his father bought land that they were selling lots. And that
I think I know who you're talking about,
Yeah, you joined the co-op, And it kind of, you supply them and they distribute your food or you don't and whatever, and it's your land. So that was kind of, an interesting thing. And father and son run that. And then the guy in Northern California have people come in, and then maybe they'll invite you to stay and be part of their family and kind of, but it was a process. And then how do you get rid of people? And it just, it's a thing. Now, fortunately, my wife is a real estate agent. And, so we went, we were searching a lot, and she's got access and all the whiz bang of database, whatever the hell. So, we did that a lot here and, found what we wanted, it's got rough access, and until you kind of, clean up the road, you might need four-wheel drive and trim this bush, and the county's not really out here. They don't go because the access kind of, and I'm like, I'm sitting there, the price is worth more and more every time they say this kind of stuff. Of course, I'm negotiating less and less with them, but I'm like, man, I'd be liking it. So a lot of the people, are good friends and everything. Once I describe this and show pictures of it, my family comes out and we do a picnic this last weekend, all of a sudden, the wheels are turning. They're going, yeah, this is what I'm talking about. The benefits of being remote. You don't have, if the county shows up and says, we had a complaint, I'm going, from who? A satellite? Exactly. What are you talking about? So what's your closest neighbor, a occupied structure, is how far from yours?
Well, I can see one of my neighbors from across the valley, so as the crow flies, they're probably a mile away. I have neighbors, so I live on this ridge, and then most of my neighbors live in the valley. So I have neighbors. I have about seven different homes in this, call it, 3-square-mile area that I'm in. And so I do have neighbors. They're all very resourceful, which is great. That's partly why I moved here. You know, we've got one of my neighbors has a mill, and he's been logging, doing selective logging in this area for 30 years. He's got a fire truck with, you know, thousands of gallons of water all summer sitting right there ready to go. He's put out more fires in this area in the last 30 years than the government has. And so my neighbors are all very resourceful. And that's a big part of how I choose places. And because I, you know, with freedomfarmers.com, we have a program called the Homestead Accelerator, where we basically pick out prime homestead properties around the U.S. that we look for certain characteristics, and we evaluate all those things. We evaluate risks and threats and the climate and the topography and the water and the soil and the microclimates and all this kind of stuff. And, yeah, we look for those characteristics. And so, yeah, you really got to have the whole picture as far as a good homestead is concerned. But, yeah.
How far are you from a big box? I got to go get me a bunch of 2x4. Well, you got your mill guy.
Well, yeah, I'm about 25 minutes from a town where I can get 90% of the things that I need. And then I'm about 2 hours from a bigger town where I can get anything I need.
So, do you get delivery? I mean, are they Amazon coming to your door?
No, they won't come to my door. My driveway is too long. but that's fine. I just go pick it up at the post office. It's not a big deal. So, yeah, I mean, living rurally has its challenges, but these things are all trade-offs, you know? So, for me, I prefer that because I'm apocalyptically optimistic, I would say, with where Western society and civilization is going. And so, I prefer a bit of isolation, though it's not isolated. We have so many homeschooling family friends and stuff in this area that, you know, our kids aren't isolated. Winter can be a little bit isolating. We're kind of on the tail end of that now. But
okay, this brings
it's a good trade-off for me.
Yeah, no. I'm with you, brother. A lot of people don't understand that. That's one reason I was looking forward to talking to you because, you know, I think we're in the same mindset, even though we're totally different climate. I mean, this is couldn't be more night and day unless you're in the Arctic or something. But the other thing is heavy equipment. This is the one thing that, you know, I don't really have a lot of earth moving. I kind of do, but it's the topography. When you look at your topography on yours, those lines are what, 10, 20 feet on your topography map? You still there?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to pull up your topography map here. And the lines on these are what? 20 feet. Scroll. Come on. Should have went the other way.
Yeah, I know what image you're talking about. Those contours are...
Yeah.
Those are... I think those ones are... Oh, those ones are pretty wide. That would be probably 20 feet on those contours.
Okay, so the contour, my land, I might have one line. I mean,
you're a lot flatter.
Yeah, from one corner to the other corner is 1,700 feet is a drop of 10 feet.
Right.
So I have like three main washes on it that kind of, and that's exactly what I was looking for. I wanted to be able to accumulate the water where I wanted it to, create some berm and swale, being able to have kind of lift it maybe, you know, less than a foot and have a driveway runway. We're going to actually put in a runway. And so I'm going to go ahead and take care of that. And that kind of blocks also a lot of the water, and it channels a pond. And I'll fill it with sand, and you get a third, two-thirds is displaced, and a third of it's, you don't even know it's there, and filters it, and I got a pond, whatever. So doing this contour of the land, I don't need like a bunch of big bulldozer. I might have one swipe, you know, to kind of clean up the road so I can get the bus back there and out and that kind of thing. So it's not a lot of earthwork. But I do need to be able to move some dirt around. I need to be able, we designed this last summer, we did a trommel that separates the, the soil into, you know, fine sand, wash sand, gravel, that kind of stuff. And I have an electric big motor for it that's three-phase variable, reversible, freaking kick butt of, man, that's how we're doing it. So, We have a block maker that is a 5-ton log splitter that has an electric motor powering a hydraulic pump. Because I have so much solar that we've done. Everything's electric. I get an electric loader. I get these mini, like Bobcat from China, and it's electric. I'm like, cool. I don't have any diesel fuel cost any kind. So this is kind of where I'm going. My question is, with having this kind of, smaller construction site, building a home, heavy equipment, I need a bucket, a skid steer, or a mini axe, and that kind of stuff. Everybody's on my, don't get a backhoe. You need to get a skid steer. No. You need a mini axe first. And you got to be, I'm going, I don't know. It seems like a backhoe would be the thing for me. But heavy equipment, what do you find on what you're using? You're a little bit different. You're a little bit more hilly, but mountainous area. What is your favorite heavy equipment thing you think, Ernie, you got to get a what?
Well, it depends, man. I mean, my conditions are so different than you. Skid steer is definitely my number one machine. I've got 5 or 6 implements for it because it's construction. It's, lifting material. It's snow management. I got a snow blower and a snow blade. I got the bucket to move material. I've got a grader for managing my driveway. It's absolutely my number one machine.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people are saying is that you cut out there for a little bit, but they're saying the skid steer. And if I could get the same
KX040, it's got the 6-way dozer blade. It's incredible for terracing. I've done all my own earthworks here, so all the terracing, all the road building, the ponds I had help with, but all the French drains. Drainage is super important on my climate and my property.
Okay, so skid steer is your favorite. You might as well get a skid steer. Don't be a slacker. Get a skid steer.
Well, yeah, but when I'm done construction, I'm going to... I might not ever sell that skid steer. It's so useful. But I think I would like to have a tractor so that the turnaround doesn't make a mess. Because, with skid steers, they just wreck your driveway, especially during the sensitive time.
Well, do you have a track or wheel?
Wheels, but a track machine doesn't work for me because I'm on really rocky material. My ground is rocky, and track machines are terrible in the winter. They slide sideways, so it's terrible for my climate. So I have a skid steer with wheels, and I put chains on all 4 wheels for 4 months of the year, and so that's how I manage my 1 kilometer, 0.6 of a mile long driveway. Is with that.
Well, here in the desert, they're talking about getting track over wheel because the wheel make more damage. You think that's not true? That wheels are softer on the dirt.
No, wheels aren't softer on the dirt, but again, my ground is so rocky that I have shale everywhere, a sharp rock, and so a track machine, I would blow through tracks, and tracks are like $4,000 to $6,000 to replace.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
USA News Update. President Biden, in a sit-down long-form interview with MSNBC over the weekend after his State of the Union, he discussed the Israel-Hamas war and says it's time for Israeli leaders to be more mindful of innocent lives.
He has a right to defend Israel, a right to continue to pursue Hamas, but he must pay more attention to the innocent lives being lost as a consequence of the actions taken.
During the interview, Biden also expressed regret at having referred to a Georgia murder suspect who killed as an illegal immigrant instead of an undocumented one. It's now less than a month to go before a total solar eclipse will cross North America. On April 8th, people in 15 states will be able to see the moon almost totally cover the sun. Skies will temporarily darken in the path of totality. I'm Ryan Daniels, USA News.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few highlights. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I have been using Extendivite for many years. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, on the Free Talk Live Network on Genesis. We're continuing our conversation with Curtis Stone, the urban farmer.
No, wheels aren't soft throwing the dirt. But again, my ground is so rocky that I have shale everywhere, a sharp rock. So a track machine, I would blow through tracks. And tracks are like $4,000 to $6,000 to replace. And they're not good in winter because with tons of snow, track machines, the machine, if you're driving a track machine on a slightly sloped driveway, you're going to slide.
You're at the bottom, yeah. Yeah.
You're going to slide sideways. So track machines are not good in snowy climates. They're fine for managing the snow on a parking lot, but on a mountainside, they're totally risky. So I love track machines. Like I would rather have a track machine because they are softer on the turn, but it's just not, for my context, it's just not practical. So it just depends on what you're doing. I mean, at first I was going to buy a tractor that had the excavator on the back, with the 3-point hitch connection. Mm-hmm. But I'm so glad that I did what I did, and I just got two machines, because two machines really make the work fast. And one I have a lot
machines.
Of earthworks here.
Yeah, the track. Yeah, the skid steer, yeah, and
the,
what else?
I got the skid steer and the 4-ton excavator, the Kubota 040. It has a 6-way dozer blade. It's a fantastic machine for terracing and doing the type of earthworks I'm doing in my driveway work. Gutters on ditches on the slopes of the driveway. I mean, my driveway alone, I spent $80,000 on just material, culverts, gravel, not including any of my labor. I've probably put in 300 hours of machine work on my driveway.
Yeah, I'm trying to get away from a lot of, that's one reason why we purchased this particular piece of property, because I could see, you know, in helping my friends in New England and up in Washington State, they spend tens of thousands of dollars just getting to where I'm at, you know?
Yeah, so I like that, though, because then people can't show up here. So that's why that was a big part of the appeal to my property, is that nobody's coming up my driveway. Nobody. And so I like that. And so, again, I'm apocalyptically optimistic, but I think that we are going to hit a phase at some point, especially with all the migrants coming up the U.S. border. There's going to be so many desperate people at some point that there's going to be a breaking point where there's just simply not enough resources to go around. And then that's where I close the gates and I say, I'll see you in a few years. And we're at that point at our homestead where we could do that. We've had enough agency over food, water, energy, shelter up here that we can essentially just close the gates and be more or less autonomous for a very long time. And my driveway is my biggest security aspect, is that most people will not come up it. And you can't even, when you're at
none
the bottom
shall
of
pass.
Exactly. But when you're at the bottom, I got multiple gates too, but when you're at the bottom of my driveway, you don't even know what's up there. You're just like, well, that's kind of looks a little gnarly. I don't really want to drive up there. So that's a huge thing.
Yeah, so, that was because, one thing. Let me ask you this. I have the architect wants to come, and he's really a listener and a good friend and, you know, a reader on the site, and he saw what we were doing, and he's, you know, an architect in San Diego, and his son went to ASU, and we kind of, you know, kept an eye on him and so on, and, you know, he bought some property here, used on it, so we're friends. So he's willing to put forth the effort, way more than I could probably afford. In fact, if you were to do some financing, you know, which I'm not doing, but if you were to do that, the work that he's done on that goes towards a down payment of freaking, it's awesome that he's able to do this kind of stuff. So he wants to come out and set his butt on the land, camp overnight or two, and kind of, you know, start orientation of where things go. Fine, cool, get your butt out there, but you better have a four-wheel drive. You know, I'm just saying. I mean, you probably could make it. There's one of the neighbors out there, you know, the only neighbor I have for miles is one guy that's like a half mile away, quarter mile away, you know, has a property out there, and he's a leave me alone, so it's all good. But we share, you know, the access of the property. So I do have another person that wants to be able, his two-wheel drive Kia that his wife commutes with, that, you know, once a week she goes in to do whatever she does. And I'm going, okay. But he's out there with a, you know, 20 horsepower riding mower with a blade on the back, and that's all that's his therapy, man. He's just, I'm retired and I'm on my little, you know, tractor. So I'm like, man, you're killing me. You know, so to bring the bus in, I'm going to have to trim some, but we already did this last weekend for my son-in-law to bring in his F-350, and he pulls a fifth wheel in four-wheel drive, and you're going to scratch my brand new, you know, shiny black paint. Oh, hell no, man, you better get over there and trim that, you know, so we're kind of doing that thing. We have good friends that have heavy moving equipment that can do the road. Go in. Fine, bring in the bus. We got a nice road until we've got to maintain it. So I need some equipment, you know, a backhoe or something, a skid steer or whatever, kind of maintain it a little bit more than what's being done now for access. But you can get too smooth. You can make it too easy. You can make it a little bit too much of a road. So she's like, but I want my Enclave. I thought you've been screaming about a four-door diesel truck all these years. You're going to get one, you know, four-wheel drive. But I like my Enclave. So that is something that I'm sure she's in there listening to the show. I'm like, yeah, what Curtis Stone says. It needs to be a little rough, you know. We need to make it a little more difficult. The man needs to get stuck, you know, that kind of thing. So, because I'm not counting on they're going to come put out a fire. They're not going to come out and law enforcement's going to whatever, you know, draw what chalk line. I mean, you know, be the bad guy and I got a backhoe. I mean, you know, that kind of thing. So this is, I'm looking at how passable is your road? What does it take to get there? Is it just visually imposing, or is it practically, oh, my God, do you attract vehicle?
No. The driveway is very well done now. It's just that when you're at the bottom of my driveway, it's a sliver that cuts into the forest that goes straight up. The first part of it's very steep. And so it's just, and I don't have anything down there. So you can't really tell there's anything up there. So it looks kind of unassuming. But the driveway is very safe.
Do you have a gate?
Yeah. I got a gate at the very bottom, inset from the road, so you don't see it at the road. And then I have a secondary gate kind of coming into the main area of that we, the 8 acres that we've fenced. So there's two gates. And yeah, nobody's
How do you post it? I mean, it's like we're talking to Gail in Florida, and he has a sign that, you know, read this first, thou shalt
not.
Yeah,
I got a sign. I got a sign that says no trespassing and whatnot, and that works, so that's good. And then, yeah, I keep both those gates closed and locked. And, yeah, so, I mean, I get my Amazon or whatever things mailed to my rural post office that I have to drive, you know, 5 minutes to go to get, which I like. And, yeah, it's great because it's really good peace of mind to just, you know, there's no crimes of opportunity happen here because you can't just swing in. And most crimes are crimes of opportunity.
Right.
And so... it's great. It's also very topographically, it's very geographically difficult to scale my property. So even if you wanted to hike in off the road, you're climbing up you're climbing up rock faces. Like it's a castle on a mountain. That's what was
cool.
a big appeal to me when I bought this property. When I looked at it, I was like, this is exactly what I want. I want to have this epic area where I've got almost 360 view, total privacy, and that sense of security. And so, yeah, that's what it is. No, the driveway is very safe. But in the winter, I do tell people, you know, you have to have four-wheel drive and preferably studded tires to drive up here. I maintain it very well. But there are times where I just won't plow it because now that I've done the initial work on my driveway, the switchbacks are all clean. There's ditches everywhere. There's no puddles that build up anywhere. There's no soft spots. I still will tell, and it's usually my wife's friends, don't drive up the driveway.
Right.
I had to pull them out with the skid steer and the winch a few times. But, you know, all my construction guys, they understand, just come up in four-wheel drive, and then it's no problem as long as you got
a good tire. Okay, now one other thing, you mentioned this quite a bit, and this is something that we'll be using. You said French drains. There's going to be a lot of drainage to do what we need to do, especially to accumulate the water the way. I want to talk about the pond before we get done, too. But, the French drains, I have a lot of different ways that we think we're going to do it. But until you do it, you know, that may not be how you do it. And we have 3 to 5 main washes that are shallow. They're only, you know, maybe a foot deep, 3-4 feet wide. And man, it's washed sand. It's desert. You know, you got washed sand.
Yeah.
Now, the banks, it's clay. It's clay probably a good 8-10 inches, and it's perfect for mixing of adobe. That's why I need a trommel to kind of separate and get all the perfect mixture of doing whatever we're going to be using, a combination of earth pad, spray foam, concrete. I mean, I've played with all kinds of stuff, and I can see an application for every one of them, you know. So we're going to be doing all kinds of funky stuff. We're going to learn a lot, and we'll be documenting it, and we'll be, you know, sharing. But the thing is that I'm probably not going to do big tech. You know, I mean, we have all the accounts and everything, but I stopped doing YouTube after the Lovolution. I don't know if you know, I'm the one that created the Ron Paul Revolution logo, that big, you know, the Ron Paul Lovolution was a thing. That's why we call it the Love Bus, you know. And during that process, met a lot of people, you know, have a lot of contacts, a lot. So that's why I'm, you know, I have, you know, a fan base. You know, there's, you know, people that give a crap what we're doing and so on. But we got to be selective. But I do want to create a community, but we can do it on Freedom's Phoenix, or we have different new protocols and so on that we've been using, IPFS. All this video and everything gets stored on IPFS, so it can't be censored or deleted or any of that. I don't give a crap what YouTube does. So... after 2009, after the Lovolution, man, it was obvious what was coming. I could see, man. You think censorship's even bad now? Now it's war in 24, man. I'm telling you, the purge be a coming. So we have been doing everything, and this I'm certain would be of interest to you as time goes on. That you can. All I wanted was to be able to store ones and zeros. I need these files up: video, audio, MP3, PDFs, JPEG, whatever the heck. I don't give a crap. I want to have ones and zeros somewhere that I can access from anywhere, and it can't be censored, deleted, obfuscated. Can't get to it. Can't anybody be able to access it, whatever, if they know about
it,
you know? So we've accomplished that. So that, we got that taken care of. I've been using that for years. Now we have Cordal, which is a total web replacement that has a lot of features. That's coming. Then we have Bastion as a social media thing. I've been working with them to be able to embed IPFS, so we're probably going to be doing that. So I'm not looking for the metrics, maybe like you are with YouTube and how much and I got to deal with and you know, like, crap, because my thing is, I'm interested in how much shadow banning you think you're getting, because when you start talking about when Ernie says, yeah, this is what I'm doing, ain't it cool, and this is why, and we are not asking permission, and we are not, woo, that boy gets targeted, you're not allowed, okay?
Oh, yeah, I'm shadow banned up the wazoo, dude. I have almost 600,000 subscribers on YouTube, and my videos, I'm lucky to get 10,000 views. The numbers don't make any sense. I started talking about the New World Order before COVID, and I just kind of coming out, you know, like I said, in 2016, I started calling stuff out. I just felt that it was my moral obligation to do so. But I saw all this coming, and so I, Freedom Farmers, and the company that I run now with, you know, a bunch of other awesome guys, I became independent of these platforms years ago. Like, I could be like a guy like Justin Rhodes or Epic Gardening on YouTube and not talking about any of this stuff and be making $50,000 a month on YouTube revenue, no problem with my subscriber base if I was just doing that stuff. So, sure, I could have done that. Did it hurt me economically?
Ah, right when he was getting to the good. I'll make sure he repeats it when he comes back. Because this is an important thing, and one of the reasons why we've done
well with that.
But we lost you there for, you know, another 5 seconds or so. But you could have done this, but you chose to go independent and having access.
Yeah.
So if your video is not if it's on YouTube, is that where I'm getting it? Is there any other place that you're loading?
Yeah, it was from thefield.tv. Since then, we've consolidated it into Freedom Farmers, but yeah, I mean, I've changed my whole direction and that I'm no longer trying to just crank out content because it is a rat race. You know, you kind of talked about it at the beginning. Right. How do you manage making content all the time and then doing all the homesteading stuff? Good question. It's really difficult. And I have children, and if I want to be available for my wife and my kids, I have to try to get a 9-to-5 schedule to some degree, you know? And so, Freedom Farmers allowed me to do that, but also I found a win-win where I could basically create really valuable content, charge for it, but then change my lifestyle a little bit. And so what Freedom Farmers is now is that it's a content platform focused on courses and not vlogging entertainment content. It's basically in-depth courses on, we have 20 courses that cover tons of different verticals within organic and regenerative and small-scale farming and homesteading and off-grid living. And I find other experts. And so I guess all my years in the field of traveling around the world, my network has become amazing. And so I guess, you know, there's the old saying, your network is your net worth. So I really started to leverage my network, and I started to find and identify other content creators that were doing, not content creators, actually just experts in the field. And then I found them, and one of the first courses we developed outside of myself was with a guy named Jonah Kroc-Molnick. I made a YouTube video with him years ago. He was running a microgreens farm in Toronto that did $750,000 a year on 4 people full time. And so I reached out to him and said, hey man, you know, I made a microgreens course. That's how people kind of got to know me, was through microgreens, but he was doing it better than I was. And I said, hey, you know what? I'm kind of getting burnt out of doing microgreens. I want to do other things, but I think you could do very well with this. And so we built a course with him, and then he was the kind of the first prototype. We started building courses with other creators or other farmers, because often the best farmers aren't YouTubers. The best farmers and the best experts in the field aren't necessarily the charismatic showman like I kind of am.
Right.
And so I started bringing those guys in, building courses with them. They are making lots of money. They're happy. And then we started adding other parts to the platform. So then we added the social media, social network to it, where there's a members map where you can find people in your area that are like-minded. We do live events. I love how you got this on the screen right now. We do live events where there's coaching calls every single month with different creators. And then we have like this network of suppliers where we give you discounts on all kinds of stuff, seeds and supplies, all kinds of stuff for your homestead or your farm. And then we've got our homestead directory, which is insane value. We used to, when we first launched this program, it came out of, I built a course last spring called Finding the Perfect Homestead Property, which basically teaches people my full spectrum analysis of how to evaluate land for the climate, the topography.
You know, I think that's when I remember. I've seen your stuff before. It was when you were starting to do evaluation of people's dreams of whatever. That's when I really kind of goes, Curtis, man, what makes him so he knows how? Because I've had Joel Salatin on, and Skousen. You know, Skousen is always going on about, you know, selecting the properties and so on and whatever criteria. And your criteria on this, I'm going, all right. So I started paying attention, and we post your stuff. And so that was when I really became aware of Curtis Stone.
Okay, yeah, right on. Well, that's cool. That's cool to hear because, I got bored of urban farming, to be honest. Like, I'm the kind of guy that if I get really good at something and I sort of master it, I kind of want to go to the next thing. And so that was this, because I did this in consulting for 10 years. People would hire me. I charged $400 an hour. People would throw properties at me and say, hey, pick the winners and pick the losers. And so I would do that. I'd take this analysis using the 11 scales of permanence, and we'd evaluate the properties. And then we published that course. It was quite successful. And then we had a lot of people who took the course saying, hey, why don't you guys just do regular evaluations of properties? Because in this course, it shows you my methods, how I evaluate land, and then we do 52 full-spectrum analysis that we grade properties around North America. So we go through U.S. climate zones 3 through 10, or 3 through 9. We evaluate.
You keep mentioning climate zones, and I have no idea what you're
USDA
talking about.
USDA climate zones. You know, climate zones. You're probably in a zone 5 or 6 down there. I'm in a zone 4. The climate zone measures your lowest temperature in the winter. So if you're in, you know, Central Florida, you're a climate zone 9 because you don't get below freezing ever. Up where I am, I get down to, you know, what I don't know what it is in Fahrenheit, but I get down to minus 30 Celsius up here, which is close to the equivalent in Fahrenheit. So that's the marker of how cold your property gets. And so we evaluate all these properties, and then somebody said, hey, why don't you just do this regularly? And so we did. It was kind of a hard thing to start because it's expensive going out and doing these evaluations. It's a lot of my time. So I trained a team to do it, and then they have basically a wide funnel. We take about 200 properties every week. We funnel them down to about 10 to 20, and then they get published on this directory. And so now we've streamlined this process. So when people sign up for freedomfarmers.com, they access that directory. And it's an insane value. We used to charge $3.99 a month U.S. for the service because it was that valuable. Now you can sign up and pay, under $50 a month to access all of our content. And so we found a way to kind of make it cheaper.
So that's a way for someone, they're serious about finding land. They subscribe for 4, 5, 6, 12 months, and then they find it. And that's one thing we went through here in the Valley. You know, they call it Valley of the Sun. You know, it's Phoenix area, metropolitan area. Maricopa County is, I think, the largest county in the nation. I mean, by square foot, I mean, by size. And the promise I made my wife as we do this Love Bus Liberty tour, we in 19, we could see, like you, we saw what was coming. You know, when the Fed had a little open window kind of back door given to the banks kind of thing in September of 19, I'm like, you know, here it comes. They're going to have to do something. We got to get on the road. We got to get smaller. We got to go find land. We got to do the bus thing. This is going to crash. We're going to be out, you know, doing the show across the country. And in the meantime, we're looking for a place. We come back, I build you a home, you go with me, baby. I mean, you know, our kids are grown, grandkids are all doing well, they're all fine. You know, we'll do this on the road for a few years, then we come back, I'll build you a house. That was the deal. Well, that was the end of 19, and we did vaccine education summits before in 16, and then one in 19. You have, you know, Dr. Judy Mikovits and Dale Bigtree and all that kind of, you know, I interview all these guys, and we kept Dr. Judy alive for years. Every week I would interview her 100 times, 200 times we've interviewed her just to keep her alive, you know, because that was my opinion. Then they had their session 201, whatever. Here comes, you know, the Wuhan thing was starting in December, and we just couldn't get ready fast enough. So we get liquidated, everything. We hit the road April, I think, with the Love Bus. So we go around the country. We're seeing a lot of different places. Didn't matter. I'm not allowed to look at anything because, damn it, you promised me within an hour, hour and a half of grandkid soccer games. That was the deal, okay? So as we go around the valley, you know, it's like a big circumference, you know, hundreds of miles, looking for, finally, ding, found this one valley out here, Ocwahela Valley. It's got plenty of what we wanted, you know, kind of the same way you would evaluate something. And it is a subjective, personal thing, but I feel pretty good about this. Old ranch land from back in the day, 100 years ago. I mean, you can see remnants of barbed wire from, you know, back in long time. It's kind of separated. It has private property. There are ranches that you can do. You can get it down to 10 acres and up to 160, kind of what. So I'm going, yeah, we get this and show what can be done. Donna's going to be busy playing real estate, you know. Everybody go, ooh, I want to go where they're at. So there's that. But do I really want that? And when we're out, it's probably 30 miles from the off the highway I-10 exit, but I can see where they're going to do an exit. I guarantee it's going to be the one close to it. We're going to be 3 miles from an exit. Sooner or later, here it comes, you know. Because this area where we have was in the early 70s, Cave Creek Carefree, north of Scottsdale here in Phoenix area. Because I remember as a kid, 12 years old, coming here in the early 70s, this is what that was, you know, 50 years ago. I can already see it. But this is generational. This is for my kids and grandkids. That's why we had a 2 acre. I love that. So I needed at least 10 acres, 5 families, 2 acres apiece. You're not in each other's face. Do whatever you want. You got enough space to have peace. Then we found this, you know, almost 20 acre thing. I go, even better. All right, cool. We'll do that. So that's long-term planning, very similar to what you were thinking. So as you're talking about the zone thing and so on, what was the other criteria? What were you looking at when you evaluate this funnel and you put all these in? You know, this might make it on the list. Why? Mm. Why not? You know, what is your criteria?
Thank you.
It's easy to see. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. We all know something big is coming, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming more self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. My Patriot Supply is the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, and they make it easy for you to prepare. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure some emergency food kits. There's a dozen to choose from that contain tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one food kit for each family member. My Patriot Supply also sells large solar generators, gravity-powered water filtration systems, heirloom seeds for your garden, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your items will ship that same day. Time is short. Prepare today. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for youth.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals into your body.
And nicotine, which can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media.
Many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping.
Because when you talk, they hear you.
Anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.